It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here on your number one local radio station. It is the 9 till noon show. It's the 26th of May, 5 minutes past nine. I hope you're all very well indeed. How was your weekend? I hope it went well for you. It's interesting, you know, lots of stuff pops up at the weekend. Some of the contacts I had, a lady was being harassed by an international caller begging for money. Another family have a young person in the home waiting 4 months for a driving test, and it's causing a great deal of anxiety. And another person had their car hit by a car from Northern Ireland, and the Northern Irish Insurance Company refused to engage with them. I'll ask you more about those a little later on, potentially, particularly the last one, but it's just that stuff happens at the weekend, and we're here Monday to Friday, but we never really switch off. So if you've got something that you want to talk about or something that popped up for you over the days between now and Friday, get in touch with us. Maybe we can get a resolution to you. Maybe the hive mind of the 9 till noon show listenership might be able to assist you or give you some guidance or support. The lines are open for everybody, whether you've ever texted a radio station or us or not. 086 60 25000. We want to hear your news and we want to hear your views. You can WhatsApp that number too. If you want to WhatsApp voice notes, do that. You know, not everyone can read and write as well as other people, or have other issues that might make sending a voice note better. We want to give everyone the opportunity to have their say and get their issues addressed or their feelings off their chests. So 086 60 25000. Now, you can give us a call. It is Donna Marie and Shannon who are taking your calls today, and also email comments at highlandradio.com. And don't forget, you want to watch the show, and good morning to Dolores and Noreen already saying hi. Hello, ladies. You can watch the show if you're at home or working from home or working in the home on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. Open up the YouTube app, type in Highland Radio Ireland, and we're there, and you can see most of our guests and topics. Or if we're talking about, I don't know, illegal dumping or some issues like that, we often have photographs, so you're able to watch and engage in that regard. We're also across our Facebook pages and on the X platform as well. As is the norm, we'll have a look at what's making the front pages and inside some of the newspapers today, starting locally, the Derry People Donegal News. A local councillor believes that now is not the time to proceed with a number of active travel projects in Letterkenny as the town is choking with traffic congestion. The topic is expected to generate some lively debate at today's meeting of Donegal County Council in Lifford, where councillors will be asked to give the green light for the major works, which would primarily see the installation of dedicated cycle lanes and new footpaths on the Circular Road and also on the Ballyrain Road in the town. However, Councillor Brogan, Councillor Kieran Brogan, has stated that he'll be opposing the plans as they currently stand. The single biggest issue at the moment in Letterkenny is the amount of traffic congestion in the town and the need for proper traffic management, he told the Donegal News. But what do you do? I mean, I think it's clear that things that are happening in and around Letterkenny at the moment are with one eye on the future, i.e. when the 10T projects progress. So, you know, if you have less traffic in the town because of relief roads or bridges or whatever it might be, you know, you want the town to be an easier place to navigate and people to move around in different ways. More people are on bikes and scooters or out walking now. But in the absence of that relief, you know, there's an awful lot of traffic. And if you narrow roads, take away lanes, that causes problems. It's a tough old balancing act because the money's there now to do some of this work in and around the town. I hope I haven't framed it incorrectly, but that's how I see it. I just feel the town is developing ahead of the development that's needed, i.e., you know, the relief bridge. Keep traffic that doesn't want to go to Letterkenny out of Letterkenny. And then, you know, make it in a more active travel space, you know, town buses, bikes, scooters. But as I say, the money is there right now for the active travel projects. And I don't know if it's a use it or lose it situation, but it's a big shout because do we think about the here and now, or do we think about what's the situation going to be in 5, 10 or 15 years? If you're in and around Letterkenny, what do you think? 086 60 25000. Do you believe the active travel project should continue, or do you believe they should be suspended pending you know, the relief of traffic in Letterkenny? The Derry News this morning reports that Derry Peace Building Intermediary provided a character reference a character reference to, I presume, prominent loyalist Winston Irvine. It's emerged in the reference. City Centre manager Jim Roddy described Winston Irvine as honest and trustworthy. Trial documents obtained by Belfast Telegraph journalist Sam McBride revealed Jim Roddy and former Methodist Church president Reverend Harold Good had provided a joint written statement of character for Irvine following his arrest in 2022. On to the Nationals now, and the tragic case continues, of course, of Mike Gane. It has been confirmed that the remains that had been found, as they're being described, you have to be sensitive, were that of the missing farmer. So he is officially a victim of a crime, it would seem. But this case is just starting to take the sort of feeling of, you know, Sophie Plantier, Tuscan de Plantier. And it just has those kind of hallmarks, you know, whereby there is a crime, there is a suspect. That suspect has been released without charge by Gardaí, but he's speaking to the press and, you know, he seems to be a bit of a character. But all that to one side, we have a grieving family and community that seem some distance away from getting the answers, and it just feels like that Sophie Tuscan de Plantier case and others that we've seen. I hope it's not the case, but it just has that, you know, just has that feeling towards it. I don't know if you get where I'm coming from, but Gardaí have confirmed that the remains found on a Kerry farm are those of missing man Mike Gaines. A Garda spokesperson said they continue to appeal to the public for assistance in the investigation. They said in a statement last night, human remains found at farmland at Carrick East Kenmare have been identified as being the remains of Michael Gane. It comes as the Sunday Independent revealed the man arrested on suspicion of the farmer's murder is the subject of a deportation notification. The individual who described himself as an asylum seeker was officially notified some time ago. Aged in his 50s, he was arrested and released without charge last week in connection with the investigation into the killing of the missing 56-year-old Kerry farmer over 2 months ago. He denies any involvement and is free to leave Ireland if he wishes. I believe he's originally from the United States. Gardaí cannot rearrest him unless new evidence comes to light. Mr. Gane was reported missing from his home near Kenmare on Friday, March 21st, and his remains have been located and identified following significant searches. And again, even how Mike Gane's remains were discovered, you know, and the handling of the initial search and what have you, as I say, it just throws up so many answers, and it's a true mystery. Right, now, on to the roads. The Irish Times this morning. I really don't get, but I believe people must be getting legal advice in this direction, because otherwise, how would so many people know that you can sort of circumvent certain elements of the law? But almost 80% of the almost 3,000 drivers disqualified by the courts in the first 3 months of this year did not have their bans automatically implemented because motorists did not provide their licence with their unique driver number. Minister of State for Transport Sean Canney said the department received 2,877 individual court disqualifications orders between January and March 31st, and of those, 2,260, that's 79%, did not have a driver number. In such cases, a manual search is undertaken to attempt to match the record. If this proves unsuccessful, then a shell record is created on the National Vehicle and Driver File, a database containing details of 2.9 million registered vehicles and the names of their owners. So again, I'll ask, you know, why do so many people know not to submit their driver number? And if you are banned, does that mean that these drivers continue to drive because they, you know, they still have their license? Whatever it is, there are people who are dangerous drivers who remain on the road. And unfortunately, our roads have been incredibly dangerous as of late. Four women were killed in separate instances on the roads on Saturday. Two pedestrians, a driver and a cyclist, were tragically killed in counties Tyrone, Clare, Wexford and Meath. This is the Sun. In County Tyrone, a two-car crash outside Omagh resulted in the death of an 82-year-old woman. Bernadette Cranley from Lifford was driving a silver Toyota Vitz that collided with a blue Suzuki Vitara on the Mellon Road at around half 12 in the afternoon. The other driver, a woman in her 70s, was taken by ambulance to hospital for treatment of serious injuries. Just 15 minutes later in Clare, a woman in her 70s died after the bike she was riding was hit by a tractor. She was pronounced dead at the scene. It's understood the woman was a visitor from abroad. Then at around 3 p.m. in Wexford, a pedestrian in her 20s was killed in a crash involving a car on the R702 in Enniscorthy. The driver of the car, a man in his 20s, was given medical treatment. And in Meath, 63-year-old Teresa Morgan, originally from Knoll, was killed after she was struck by a car at around 7:10 p.m. I mean, it's so much tragedy and so much loss of the life in the first instances, but also to families and friends and communities. It's incredibly sad. And, you know, overall so far this year, there's been a 40% drop in fatal and serious road traffic collisions. But then such a weekend of carnage. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and there are fears immigration officials won't be able to perform robust identity checks and security screening on asylum seekers due to the country's lack of access to key EU security databases, a government report has warned. So they know it themselves. So those that are coming into the country, and the numbers have reduced quite significantly, you know, they're checked. You know, people talk about, you know, they're not vetted. Well, that means really their background is checked. But if the government or the state doesn't have access to their background, if the truth be told, then there's no checking, is there? The report on the introduction of the EU Pact on Migration and Asylum is expected to come into force in June of next year. It says Ireland may not be able to carry out the most robust identity validation due to the country's exclusion from the Schengen area and the related IT border security systems under the 1985 Schengen Agreement. Border controls between EU member states on the European mainland were abolished. On to the Irish Daily Star now. And a man has admitted making bogus calls to the emergency services about bodies floating in the sea off our coast here in Donegal. Father of three, Nathan Coughlin, also admitted breaking into and robbing churches during a crime spree over a five-year period. The 28-year-old, who has 197 previous convictions, appeared at Letterkenny Circuit Court, where he pled guilty to a raft of charges. The charges relate to 10 different instances, all of which were carried out while Coughlin was either drunk or on drugs. The accused, who is originally from Ennis in Clare, has been in custody at Castlereagh Prison since last October. Sergeant Maurice Doyle and State Prosecutor Fiona Crawford outlined the litany of charges and details of the incidents. In total, the accused was charged with making three separate bogus calls to the emergency services, as well as breaking into four different church buildings on various dates. Coughlin, firstly, pled guilty to making a false report at Single Street Finnabundoran on November 11, 2019, that a person was on a cliff in horrendous weather conditions, which sparked a major rescue alert involving the Coast Guard, RNLI Fire Service, Gardaí and the ambulance. And on it goes, there's more that he was responsible for. He's been remanded in custody for final sentence on June 4th. Between robbing churches and taking up emergency services times. It'll be interesting to see what kind of a sentence he faces. And finally, the Tánaiste has warned the US of the negative consequences of imposing tariffs on imported pharmaceutical and microchips. These are obviously big industries for us. They're not big employers. Like, about 10% of jobs are in some of these areas, but it's like 40% of tax take. So there's a, you know, they're skewed to some extent. So whilst if they quit, you could probably absorb the job losses. Hopefully there'd be alternatives. You certainly wouldn't absorb the corporation tax. 40% of our entire take, I believe, comes from companies in this area. Well, Simon Harris has written to US Secretary for Commerce Howard Lutnick following the latter's instigation of two investigations examining whether Washington's reliance on foreign imports in those sectors poses a risk to national security. Now, in relation to potential tariffs in those areas, a massive tax plan was passed in the United States recently, and there was not much in that that would indicate it's going to happen, but who is to say? All right, that was a run through some of the stories making the papers today. We'll be back with more shortly. Niall McKenna is chair of A5 Enough is Enough campaign. And of course, Niall and many, many others, not just individuals, but groups, sporting organisations, have been campaigning for the progression of the A5. We're speaking in the context of another fatal road traffic collision, which took the life, very sadly, of 82-year-old Bernadette Bernie Cranley from Lifford. And I suppose, not wishing to be insensitive, but there's never really a good time to talk about the A5. Excuse me, about the A5, because there are so many fatal or serious collisions on that route. And Niall, both you and I and everyone extend our sympathies to the Cranley family and friends of Bernadette. But it's unfortunately another reminder that we need to progress a new road here just as soon as is possible.
You're quite right, Greg. You know, our sincerest condolences to the Cranley family, and also our thoughts and prayers to the other lady who's very seriously injured as a result of that accident as well. You know, and it, you know, you're also right in saying that, you know, no, you know, there should be no further evidence required that how dangerous and treacherous this road is and how much it needs to be replaced. You know, it's just death after death, and you know, more families devastated. You know, on average, this road kills somebody every 3 to 4 months. You know, that's the cold, hard statistic on it. And it's awful to be talking, you know, about the issue in terms of statistics, because it is about grief and death and pain.
And it's so dangerous. It can be people that are commuting between one place and another. But we know many families along the A5 themselves, people with an intimate knowledge of it and its dangers, still can succumb to it. That is the type of road that it is. It is just so dangerous.
You are quite literally taking your life in your hands every time you travel along that road. I travel along it daily. And, you know, that road will not discriminate in terms of who dies on it. It could be somebody who uses the road very irregularly, or it could be somebody that's on it daily. You know, and that's how ruthless that road can be.
Where are we in terms of the project actually progressing? Because obviously it's been opposed and blocked at many different turns. But where are we at now in terms of a potential start to fixing this road?
Well, very briefly, where the history of it is, was the scheme was given the go-ahead way back in June 2007 by Stormont. And as it's been, the whole scheme has been littered with legal objections by a very, very, very small group of people since, but who have been very effective, which obviously shows some sort of systemic dysfunction in terms of the planning system maybe here. But at the end of last year, in October of last year, the large majority of the scheme was given the go-ahead by the department, and that was the section between Strabane and Ballygolly. Within weeks, the latest objection came in, and there was a court hearing on that in the High Court in Belfast, which concluded on the 2nd of April this year. Now, in the meantime, the scheme has been going ahead. That hasn't been overturned. So, you know, people that are travelling along that road will see a lot of works, earthworks going on at different sections of it. So the scheme is currently progressing, but it is subject to a decision in Belfast. And as I say, that court case finished on the 2nd of April, and the judge is weighing up his decision at the moment, which you would imagine would be coming in the coming weeks or months. That court case, I suppose, which was different from other court cases, was that our group got granted intervener status mm-hmm. at that hearing, and you know, you would have seen in the media that, you know, the families of the victims got legally represented and got to have their say in court for the first time mm-hmm. in nearly 20 years. That was very, very powerful.
Yeah, and we'll see if it sways the judge. I mean, I would be of the view that you do need systems in place, you know, that we have controlled development, that people have a right to appeal. But there does come a point in terms of, I suppose, developments of such significance, and then obviously what they're replacing, roads that have cost so many lives and left so many people injured, there has to be a system whereby they can't be frustrated at every turn by the planning system, be it in Northern Ireland, be it in the Republic, be it wherever it might be.
You're quite right. Look, any normal democracy will allow an appeals process for any sort of decision-making, you know, but what you see in the North particularly is in these large capital projects, they're just, the system does not allow them to go through. You know, so you can see it in the A5, you can see it in other situations, maybe like Kingston Park or things like that there, where a very, very small group of people can thwart, you know, the large majority, and that's not right.
So just so to recap where we're at then, if this court case does not find in favour of the objectors, we are now at a point where the A5 that we've been talking about now for generations is progressing.
It is currently progressing, yes. The contractors are on site on the majority of the sections. As I say, the go-ahead has already been given from Ballygolly to Strabane, and that's the majority of the road. Obviously, then you would hope later on that the other two sections, which is south of Ballygolly to join the border at Auchnacloy, that would hopefully go ahead whenever there's a scheme obviously being developed in Monaghan for the M2 upgrade.
Mm.
And then obviously the most northern scheme hopefully would progress after that as well. So yes, the work is currently ongoing, but there is a court determination coming in the coming weeks.
Right, okay. We'll watch that with a great deal of interest. Niall McKenna, thank you very much indeed. Niall is chair of the A5 Enough is Enough campaign. A caller says, unfortunately, the A5 does not discriminate, which was words you heard directly from Niall there as well. This caller says, I really rarely use it and I'm very nervous when on it. People drive so fast on it. One of Europe's worst roads. And obviously speed is a factor and, you know, driver behaviour is a factor. Vehicle condition is a factor. But the road condition is also a factor in road traffic collisions. And some roads are so dangerous, even if you drive carefully, you still are at a threat. And the A5 definitely falls into that category. We were speaking on Friday about traffic and a few comments here for you. Margaret was on with us, by the way. She talked about trying to cross the road in Buncrana. There are crossings there, but the traffic does not seem to adhere to them. She's had numerous near misses. Re-traffic in Buncrana. Margaret's right about pedestrians trying to cross the road at Supervalue. On entry to Supervalue, there is traffic lights plus a yellow box. On exit, there's the traffic lights plus another yellow box. A nightmare, even for drivers. They would need to make an inside road to access same. Thank you. Please ask any word of the bypass of Snorlaugh and Ballybuffet, which would make the journey better through to the south of the county. Well, it's part of the 10T, so you've got the Letterkenny relief and you've got the road then to the border, which would link into the A5. So all of this is actually somewhat connected. And part of that is the Ballybuffet and Snorlaugh bypass. And those, they are progressing all the while. We still don't really have a start date, but the process of getting to that point continues. It's a slow process. We heard about planning and what have you, but you do have to respect homeowners and landowners. But there comes a point with the A5 where there's something else going on. Things are moving relatively smoothly, I understand, in relation to acquisitions and negotiations with landowners and homeowners as it relates to the 10T project as a whole. Kilmacrennan Village is an area that is an accident waiting to happen. Traffic speeds through the town. No point in talking about signs because no one pays any attention to them. We need a speed van on a regular basis sitting in the village to slow down traffic. And it's not just an accident waiting to happen. It's a place where accidents happen all the time. Its speed limit will be reduced significantly as part of the review that's going on at the moment. I can't imagine it won't. But will that matter without a level of enforcement? We'll have to wait and see. Why is there never any word about school cleaners? I clean a school myself and we are never given enough hours to clean the school. Are any other school cleaners experiencing the same issue? This is in the context of the treatment of secretaries and caretakers in schools. The last time we mentioned this, and it does come up, the situation, cleaners are a little bit different, aren't they? They're probably commissioned by the school, are they? And aren't necessarily on site as much as caretakers and secretaries. So I'm not sure if they'll ever be sort of lumped with them in the ongoing negotiations. Probably not unionised either, I don't know. But this caller says we're never given enough hours to clean the school. I was in hospital recently visiting a 90-plus-year-old woman who has cancer. She was given 3 x-rays, which her family and her asked not to happen, but they insisted on doing them. She herself accepts that she is at end-of-life care. Then we wonder why people are waiting on scans when unnecessary scans like this are happening. She asked for a priest and was told the priest only attends on certain days unless it is an emergency. What's wrong with the world? That's a toughie. That kind of... is a tough one for me, because unfortunately speaking to some people as it relates to the hospital, there is a concern that maybe the level of care can taper off the older you get, if that makes sense. But the medical teams here were of the medical view that these x-rays were necessary. I'm really not sure of the legalities of them sort of accepting what this lady or her family might say. That's a very complicated situation on a number of levels. A caller says, my son has never been in a fight in his life. He was out about 8 weeks ago in Letterkenny and 3 people attacked him in a club. He was badly traumatised. He had a big bruise to his forehead. All the inside of his mouth was bloodied and his nose bleeding. Just another one for the record. And I think they're suggesting that those 3 who may have been responsible for that might have been not originally from Letterkenny. Last one just before a break. Standing on the stone-aged terrace of McCool Park on Saturday, getting drowned and €20 for the pleasure. In our county ground, young and old getting soaked. Surely it's time the GEA put some money into McCool Park, both on and off the pitch, and bring it into this century. It is the county ground, and I know McCool's GEA club are very proud of it. I'm not sure if they have any plans to update it, but would you be in favour of that? I mean, obviously, on a glorious sunny day, it's not as big an issue, is it? But on Saturday, it was tipping it down and everyone was exposed to that. Probably not everyone brought the appropriate clothing. Would you welcome further investment in McCool Park in that regard? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. And of course, Brendan Devaney will be joining us a little later on. We will reflect on Donegal v Tyrone, Derry versus Armagh, and other GAA matters. A lot of club action ongoing at the moment as well. That's coming up after 11 o'clock. Now, we saw the figures last week that showed €1.5 million was raised in speeding fines in Donegal since 2019. And I suppose this opens up a number of questions or talking points. One being, that's a lot of money, a lot of detections, but also a lot of speeding, because obviously, you know, that's only the tip of the iceberg. Councillor Jerry McMonagall is former chair of the now disbanded Joint Policing Committee and joins us on the line now. Councillor McMonagall, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Greg. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. So, quite a lot of detections, 2,698 people caught speeding, and a significant chunk of those in the first 2 or 3 months of this year as well. What's your reaction to figures like these?
Well, look, you can have 2 reactions, and there is there's obviously a lot more detection of speeding, but there doesn't seem to be any prevention of it, and that worries. That would worry me, and it certainly worries a lot of other people. If we look even at the amount of fatalities we've had on Irish roads since 2019, like, it's almost 1,000 people have lost their lives, and 6,000 or more with serious injuries, and yet people are still speeding. And the detection rate, the amount of money that's been raised, $1.5 million in Donegal alone, I mean, it beggars belief that people, despite everything that we're trying to do, despite the extra detection, speed vans, the static speed cameras, that people are still not listening and not taking due vigilance of the speed limits, and are continuing to speed. And unfortunately, this leads to fatalities and serious injuries, as the statistics would show.
Yeah, and just to clarify the figures there, 15,150 fixed charge notices since 2019. In the first 5 months of this year, 2,698. I know, speaking to Gardaí off the record and on the record, in fact, and you would know too, Councillor, they're pulling their hair out. How do they get the message through? Because they're out and about, be it speed vans or not, catching people. We seem to see an increase too, or we're seeming to see an increase in drug and drink driving detections. You know, what else can be done, I wonder? What else can be done? Because messaging in and of itself, and even punishment, because we can see from these stats, is not driving the speeds down.
No, because, like, I mean, you get a €160 fine now, you get 3 penalty points. I mean, that's not a deterrent in itself. But look, I think we may have to rewind a bit. I think it's about when people are leaving school, the transition year, the last year of school, they're ready to, they're starting to learn to drive. Some of them actually have passed their test and they're still at school. But we need to be educating people more at that time of their life about the rules of the road, about the dangers of speeding, and how that you can, you know, drive sensibly on the road, drive free of drink or drugs, and to keep the speed limits. Like, we're currently doing a speed limit review across the county. We're reducing speed on some roads and leaving it as it is on others. But, I mean, this is going to be futile if people don't adhere to the new speed limits that come in.
Well, using Kilmacrenan as an example, you know, I mean, people see that as an accident black spot or a collision black spot, and it is. And that is probably going to be one of the towns or villages, however it's described, that will see the significant reduction in speed. But the public don't have faith in that, I don't think, because unless there is enforcement, like they're crying out for either a speed van or occasional, mobile speed checks by An Garda Síochána. You know, we'll get to the education bit in a moment. Sorry, Jerry, I know you wanted to speak about that. But, you know, unless people feel there is a possibility that they could be done, people just drive the way they wish, it seems, a lot of people.
Yeah, no, and I agree 100% with you there, Greg. And you have to ask, you know, where has the 1.5 million that was raised in speeding fines, where has it gone to? It certainly hasn't gone to bolster the Gardaí traffic unit to make them more visible, as you say, to be seen more on the road. I think that's the biggest deterrent. The speed vans, the static cameras, they're okay for a while, but people get used to where they park and they slow down and then they tick off again after they pass them. Whereas if you had more mobile patrols, more checkpoints, more speed traps by the Gardaí who just can turn up here and there, you know, different places, then I think we need to invest in that. And I would, you know, I wonder where the 1.5 million that was accrued in Donegal, where did that go? Did that go to the Gardaí to help them try and combat speeding motorists? I would doubt it very much.
And another thing that sort of maybe points to our attitudes to sort of roads and enforcement, stats out this morning show that around about 3,000 people were banned from driving. 80% of them didn't, even though they're required to or requested to, did not submit their driver number. So 80% of them still could be out on the road. The insurance companies don't know they're banned per se. And 8 out of 10 people know that if they don't submit their license or their driver number once they've received a ban, really until such time as they might be tracked down, they can continue to drive. So, you know, I don't know what, you'd have to be pretty, you'd have to have done something pretty serious to get banned from driving. Yet 8 out of 10 people know you can sort of get away with that if you just don't give the state your driver's number. I think that's bizarre.
Yeah, and I know now insurance companies are looking for that now when you're insuring your car. But, I mean, if you're banned, one of the things that you must do is, you know, and it would be an offence, it should be an offence if you don't do, and that's hand in your...
But how do 8 out of 10 of 3,000 motorists know that it's okay not to do that with very little consequence? That's the thing. Are they being advised that by their legal teams, for an example?
Well, I don't know about that, and I couldn't comment, but they're obviously being advised by somebody, or they've seen friends or whatever doing the same thing. But here's the point, Greg. If you're done with drink driving, there's obviously a guard involved, and they prosecute you and they give evidence at the court in the day. You're in the court. The guard who's responsible for you bringing you before the court is there. The judge is there. How can people walk out of the court without surrendering their driving license? Made an offence, but for that to be 100% adhered to, like.
See, I'd be, unless I was assured it wasn't, I'd be afraid of the guards knocking at my door and taking me away. You know what I mean? Because I'm not privy to how so many people know that you just simply don't have to. Education, is education an element to this? I think you were about to move on to that.
I think it is, Greg. I think it is. Look, if we learned anything from educating young people, we only have, you know, look at the whole healthy eating, going into schools and what you can eat and what you can't eat, what's the best healthy food they bring. Children go home, then they tell their parents, oh, don't put that, I'm not allowed that, apples or yogurt, whatever. I think of, look, when young people are getting to the age, you know, the transition year age, when they're thinking about getting their own car, getting driving lessons, that's, I think, when a subject should be there to regularly teach them and educate them as to the rules of the road. And look, we have some good roads and we have some not so bad roads. I don't know if the driving test and the 12 lessons covers a lot of that, but once they get the pass certificate, then they're law under their own, then away they go. They have an end up for a year or whatever. But I think if we educate them as they're going into that process, we teach it at schools, we do bring in Gardaí, bring in the RSA, bring in, do what they've done, great work in the Aura in bringing in people, unfortunately, have been seriously injured in road fatalities and telling their story and how it's affected their life. That has a massive impact on them young people.
Yeah. I wonder how long
it
sticks.
But I think we need to take it into the school as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I do wonder about the RSA, though, because one of their proposals that emerged over the weekend was that motorway driving would form part of the driving test. Now, we have thousands of people here waiting on a driving test. If you were able to apply for a driving test today, you won't really most likely get to do that until 2026, the start of 2026, looking at the most recent figures. But how in God's name would you introduce motorway driving as part of the test in County Donegal? Do you know what I mean? In any coverage I saw, it wasn't even factored in. It just makes you wonder... How much the powers that be really know about the roads network in this country? Sorry.
Yeah. Look, and let's face it. If we were to someone, a young person out doing their lessons, or were to get motorway training, they'd have to drive hundreds of kilometres to get a motorway. You know, like, we have to be real here. People don't understand or see while the motorways are there. There's not as many fatalities on motorways as what there is on the other roads. And that's what we need to focus on. We need to make the roads that we have in each county off the main primary routes better. We have to make them safer. But we also have to educate people as to how they drive them. And they have to drive within the speed limits.
Yeah.
The speed limit's there for a reason. It's to protect them and other road users. And until we get that into people's heads, we can lift all the money we can. We can give out all the penalty points we can. If we don't change the mindset, we're not going to change anything.
And it is our mindset. It's my mindset. It's yours. It's everyone listening to this, or their sons and daughters. Like, it is us, and we're discussing what we feel the state should do to sort of tell us what to do. We have the power ourselves to think twice, but we don't. Most of us do, but many of us don't. Okay, interesting conversation. Thank you for that. That's Councillor Jay McMonagall there, just off the back of those figures. And I believe, just to be fair, I think it was the Donegal News that obtained these figures through Freedom of Information, which is it's a bit of a task in itself, so fair play to them and credit where it is due. So 1.5 million collected in revenue since 2019, and that is from 15,150 fixed charge notices being issued. And more concerningly, the busiest period is the most recent. In the first 5 months of this year, up until May 13th, 2,698 fixed charge notices. That's just in this county alone, generating over a quarter of a million in revenue. What's your views on that? 086 60 25,000. Right. Caller says people are driving far too fast. That's why there are so many collisions on our roads. Back roads are especially bad. People drive too fast and take corners hard. We're in such a rush to get everywhere. 3 months ago, I was going to Letterkenny. I go three times a week from Buncrana. I drive around 90 kilometres per hour. I went to pass a car doing 75. I was speeding just past him. I got caught by the static camera. The safest thing for me to do was pass this driver out. I didn't know that I was speeding until I received the letter in the post. I don't think it's fair that speeding by 12 kilometres and 60 kilometres deserves the same fine as a higher speed being more dangerous. Yeah, I mean, maybe too, you know, fines could be leveraged against your income. You know, higher, if you've higher income, higher fines. They do that in other countries. I think a road safety campaigner might not have much sympathy for you because, you know, if you're overtaking someone who's doing 75 and you exceed 100 on that stretch, which unfortunately has seen, you know, an awful lot of collisions, they might say the safest thing to do is sit behind that driver until it's they pull off the road or it's safer to pass. I don't know. I'm not being judgy. I'm not that type of person. But I'm not sure road safety campaigners would sympathise with you. I'm sorry you got the fine and the penalty points, though. Right. Now, MEP for Ireland South, Cynthia Ní Mhuircheu, I hope joins me now. Good morning, Cynthia.
Hi, Greg. Cech will too. Call me on show.
Thank you so much for joining us. And Maxine White, it's great to have you with us. Right, okay. You've been running through the figures in terms of network outages, in terms of the ESB. And it's a worsening situation, is it?
Certainly is. A 22% spike in power outages nationally. That's over a four-year period, Greg, that I got the figures for on foot of an FOI request, Freedom of Information. So the years in question, to explain to your listeners, was 2021 to 2024. So between 2021 and 22, there was a jump of a 7.7 increase in outages. And then there was a slight decrease in that between 22 and 23, those 2 years. The jump was 6.3. But wait for it, Greg. There was a whopping jump between 23 and 24, those 2 years. And that jump was by 22%.
How much of that do you think can we put down to the network itself and its resilience and weather? Or maybe they're both one and the same.
Yes. Well, a lot of reasons are given by ESB networks who look after this for everybody. Most of the reasons are not for upgrades. And they include things like bad weather events and storms and bird strikes and lightning and all those things that we'd be, you know, used to hearing. Yeah. But concerningly enough now to me is that some of the reasons that were furnished to me on foot of this request were defective equipment. So we're looking at the reason for power cuts. It went from, wait for this, Greg, 2,536 power cuts caused by defective equipment in 2022. And that jumped from just 2,500, say, to 23,000 power cuts caused by defective equipment in 2024. So clearly this is a cause for concern. We're talking about rot and corrosion. We're talking about lack of investment into the infrastructure. If lines are corroding or poles or any of the other substructure around it or structure around it. And also another reason given, Greg, was unknown. Just the word unknown reasons. Now, I find that deeply troubling as to why the ESB wouldn't know what caused a power cut.
Yeah, and just to give some Donegal figures here, which you've gathered together, Letterkenny had 2,258 power cuts last year compared to 1,354 in 2021. And in Killybegs, now these aren't specific to these towns. These are areas that serve a greater area as well. I presume the constant outages in Milford would be counted in Letterkenny, for an example. In Letterkenny in 2021, 1,156 in Killybeg, in 2024, 2,042. Now, there's a lot going on here because this is disruptive to people's lives and business and schools, people being sent home from childcare. You know, it is impactful. It's not just a minor inconvenience.
Well, Greg, I don't know about you, but I know for me, electricity is a lifeline. Let's face it, everything is chargeable now from a consumer point of view and from, I suppose, regularly running a household. But think of the businesses, think of the hospitals, think of the caring services and every other type of service, whether it's schools or hospitals or fire stations or garda stations or all of these public services. Unfortunately, we are completely reliant on electricity, and whilst we move to a greener form of electricity and so forth, and that's wonderful, we have what we have right now. And to look at that percentage increase, yeah. I know you quoted the figures, but look at the increase in Letterkenny. It recorded a whopping 44% increase in power cuts between 2023 and 24, and look at Killybegs, a 61% whopping increase between those 2 years. But by comparison, when you compare it to Dublin South, or when you compare it to Dublin North, Dublin South had an increase of 11.4% far less. Dublin North, 23%, far less. So it seems to me that this is adversely affecting rural Ireland. Mm. I'm speaking now between Donegal and Dublin, but I could go through all of the other rural
counties.
We're
on the West Coast. We know what bad weather's like. We would expect the network to be more resilient, obviously, because of the pressures on it. Unfortunately, time has caught up with us. Interesting figures. Thanks so much, Cynthia. That's Cynthia Niewerku, MEP for Ireland South. I'll talk through those again after we come back after the news at 10.